As Unitarian Universalists, we find wisdom and inspiration in many places. Jewish and Christian scriptures and other sacred texts, the arts, science, nature, our own experiences. Our tradition keeps us open to revelation from many sources. Today's wisdom comes from an interview with Marcia Rose from an article in Tricycle magazine titled, "The Gift That Cannot Be Given." The Buddha taught, if you knew, as I know, the benefit of generosity, you would not let an opportunity go by without sharing. The Buddha taught and lived what is really a way of life, giving and receiving, the practice of dana. The cultivation of dana offers the possibility of purifying and transforming greed, clinging, and self-centeredness, as well as the fear that is linked to these energies of attachment. Dana practice is the foundation of Buddhist spiritual development. Generosity is the ground of compassion. It is a prerequisite to the realization of liberation. The Tibetans have a practice to cultivate generosity. They take an ordinary, everyday object, such as a potato or a turnip, and hold it in one hand and pass it to the other hand, back and forth, until it becomes easy. They then move on to objects of seemingly greater value, such as a mound of precious jewels or a handful of rice. This giving from hand to hand ultimately becomes a symbolic relinquishment of everything, our outer material attachments and our inner attachments of habits, preferences, ideas, and beliefs, a symbolic letting go of all the ways that we create a self over and over again. In our vipassana practice, this is really what we are doing, but without the props. We learn to give and to receive, letting go of control, receiving what is given, receiving each moment of our lives just as it is, with the trust that it is just right, just enough for our spiritual growth to unfold from.
And the inspiring fellowship of the church. Today is the day that someone from the stewardship team is talking to you about pledges and money, generosity and kindness, dreams and reality. I was socialized to believe it was not polite to talk about money, nor about religion. So I am going to weave stories and observations about my church life, past and present, around the context of giving money. My grandpa, Charles Parker Conley, preached at liberal Protestant churches in Kansas and Milwaukee from the 1890s to 1913, when he was called to the Rockford Church of the Christian Union. It had been established in 1842 as a Unitarian church, but did not join the American Unitarian Association until 1928. During those in-between years, he felt compelled to write a creed. I think the part of his reasoning was that he was often asked, "What's a Unitarian? What do you believe in?" And I can tell that you've been asked that question too, like I have. So he fashioned his creed, which then through the years was morphed into an affirmation of faith. Every Sunday in church, we would repeat together, "I believe in the moral purpose of life and the emerging brotherhood of man. We stand for tolerance, reason, liberty, individual responsibility, and the ethics of Jesus. We believe in the quest for truth, the path of love, the goal of character, the life of service, and the inspiring fellowship of the church." That paragraph still is the foundation of my belief system. When I have a thorny or ethical moral problem, I refer to it. So instead of asking myself, "What would Jesus do?" I think, "What would Grandpa do?" And it's true, and it helps. So when I think about why do I give my treasure, time, and talent to church, it is the inspiring fellowship of the church. We get to vote a few times a year, but every day we vote with our money by how and where we spend it. And that is as important as filling out your ballot. I, like most of us in this room, feel compelled to vote with my wallet by giving money to various political, environmental, and arts organizations. And I believe in those, but for the good work that they do not give me the inspiring fellowship of the church that I get here in this place. I know we all have different aspects of the fellowship here that we are especially fond of. The music tops many of the lists, and thank you. The social justice work, the small groups, the welcoming atmosphere, the list goes on and on. And we all have dreams of expanding some of the programs or strengthening others. For instance, I know many of us are looking forward to seeing the ways the religious education for children is going to change and grow and how we can all be a part of that. Charlie McNulty and I were talking the other day, and he said, you know, Reeb is on the very left of the spectrum, even of Unitarian Universalist congregations, but fiscally, we are very conservative. I agree, and that warms the cockles of my heart. I love the story about how this building got transformed from a t-shirt factory to a place of worship. That people's blood, sweat, tears, but I'm sure also laughter, joy, and food, made these ceilings, walls, and floors what they are now. A place to come into and become inspired. That there is no huge mortgage that needs to be part of another campaign or large item on the operating budget. And I thank all of you who did that work so much for that. I was unchurched for most of my adult working years, partly because I lived in the East Side and didn't want to track to First Unitarian, partly because I was a nurse in a hospital and had to work every other weekend, and partly, and probably because I had felt I had had enough of church while growing up. But when I moved to Duluth, the words of my mom haunted me. Ellie, she said, when you move somewhere, join the Unitarian Church. So I joined the Duluth UU congregation, and I'm so glad I did. Thank you, Mom. When I went to membership class, I was thrilled to learn that the UUA has been urging congregations to give a fair wage and benefit package for all their employees. Hallelujah, I thought. Poor as a church mouth was an accurate description of my dad's family. The lowest wage Grandpa got was $500 per year. $500 per year. Now, that was during the Depression, and he did get a parsonage. And at various times in that parsonage, there would be 9 other people besides he and his wife living there. But still, they were on a very tight budget. And sometimes congregants would drop by a bushel of potatoes or other produce. But it wasn't enough. Because Grandpa would really not accept charity, my family recently found out that there were some friends who were not big churchgoers, but had their children christened one particularly lean year so that they could give him an extra stipend. I was relaying this story to Kelly Kearns, and she asked if he did not have a second job. No, he did not have a paid job, but like many ministers, his ministry was not just his church. Because he was a socialist and believed there should be a safety net for all, he helped start the Rockford community. He started in Rockford the community chess, the precursor of the United Way. He and the congregation also worked to help the African American Community Center, which was being overwhelmed due to the large migration of people coming up the Blues Highway to get factory jobs and to get away from Jim Crow laws. Those needs, as we are well aware, have not gone away. And don't we love the extra work that Karen and all of us do in our name to build bridges and other organizations and doing the social justice work? In the spring of 2015, when I was getting ready to move back to Madison from Duluth, I went down to Birmingham to the UU's conference honoring the 50th anniversary of the Selma Voting Rights Campaign. And I met Karen, Bev, and Karen there. And I started thinking, oh, I'm going to like that James Reeb congregation. And I know when I go to marches, candlelight vigils, candidate forms, my polling place, the Solidarity sing-along, and see familiar church faces, or the purple Reeb shirts, or the yellow answering the call of love shirts, and I think, oh, I'm liking that James Reeb congregation. And when I did one of my one-on-one visits, and the person I was talking to said, I walked in there, and it felt like home. And I thought, yep, this congregation is inspiring. And I'm so lucky. I have such a good place to spend my time, talent, and treasure. So I hope it is with the generosity of spirit that envelops this space that you fill out your pledge form. And I want to thank you all for being the inspiring fellowship of the church for me. Thank you.